Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. Most of you are back in action today. If you're not in one of those 27 states being slammed by the weather, hope everyone is safe, especially in those states like Kentucky, where you're not used to driving in the snow. You do that to people in Buffalo, they get it. But I know I was in at the Super Bowl in Dallas, and it snowed, and nobody has any idea how to handle it. They had no salt for the streets and roads. That's when it gets dangerous, but for most of you, you're back in action today. You are also especially back in action in Washington, D.C., where there is a lot of action. President of the United States will be in New Orleans today, visiting the site of the terror attack on New Year's Eve. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Jabbar placed the first IED at Bourbon and St. Peter Street at 1:53 a.m. Jabbar placed the second IED in a bucket-type cooler at 2:20 a.m. on Bourbon and Toulouse Streets.
It's amazing they were able to pick this up so quick and also scoop up the IEDs so quick. I need to get some answers on that. New Orleans terror. We learned so much more about the killer and becoming apparent. He could have been stopped before attacking the city, and if tracked, never would have gotten to Louisiana. I'll explain.
Number two.
I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole damn life. And I know them. I know how they think. Not a joke.
What is wrong with him? Desperate, angry, and exposed. Biden furiously trying to save his legacy with speeches, pardons, and irresponsible awards and executive orders. The truth is coming out. He wasn't all there when he was there, and fewer are hiding it.
Number one.
Well, I hope we have full attendance. We got a big snowstorm coming to D.C., and we encourage all of our colleagues, do not leave town, stay here, because, as you know, the Electoral Count Act requires this on January 6th at 1 p.m. So whether we're in a blizzard or not, we are going to be in that chamber.
Yes, it's true, and they are. A blizzard be damned. Look for Congress to certify Trump's historical electoral victory. And yes, on January 6th, we know what that date means. The next hurdle confirming his nominees before the inauguration. And the debate is on the first major piece of legislation as the House and Senate is somewhat divided. Let's discuss. Now, first off, some good news. It looks like most everybody's there on the Republican side to certify the election. There should not be any drama, but Democrats are using every opportunity they can, especially the soon-to-be former president, to bring up January 6th and 4 years ago. President sacrificed democracy. Democracy was able to stand. Ugh, we just hear it over. I'll give awards to Liz Cheney, and we'll make sure that everybody knows what January 6th was. They do. And they did a survey, and they asked the American people, out of Trump's legacy in the first 4 years, what role does January 6th play? Only 5% said it played a major role. 5%. So that's where it stands. So let's talk about something of substance. So today his election with 300-plus electoral votes will be certified by, drumroll please, Kamala Harris, the sitting vice president of the United States. Then it becomes a question. Should the Senate pick up the border bill, then the tax reform bill, then defense spending bill, and then talk about energy after that, or should they do one big bill? The plus side of doing one big bill is get it all done. The negative side is you got to wait to April to actually draw it up. And what the House needs is a way to get people to say yes. Some people in the House would say a 2 or 1-2 to 5 vote margin says, I want tax reform. Others say, I don't want tax reform. Some say, I want border security. I don't think the border security is my priority. I want oil and gas. Okay, defense. No. So they want to be able to give everybody something so they vote for everything. That's the theory. Senator John Thune feels differently. Senator John Thune says, the Senate wants it one at a time. We want this orderly. We've got 53 votes. We'll do it on a reconciliation. It's going to take too long. The president wants quick wins. Well, if you read Truth Social, the president wants one big bill. Cut to.
He and I have talked about this quite a bit, as you might imagine, over the last few months, determining the pros and cons of the two different strategies. I respect Lindsey Graham and all my friends who kind of preferred a two-step strategy. The idea would be get something done on the border and maybe defense spending right out of the blocks very quickly in what we would call a skinny reconciliation bill, and then do the rest of it in a larger chunk later. But I think at the end of the day, President Trump is going to prefer, as he likes to say, one big, beautiful bill. And there's a lot of merit to that, because we can put it all together, one big up or down vote, which can save the country, quite literally, because there are so many elements to it.
We'll see. It's going to be hard, because we've seen it hard. It's hard for the House to do anything. They're good at throwing out Kevin McCarthy, bad at electing a new House speaker, and then they're bad at retaining that speaker. The arms had to be twisted to bring him back. Chip Roy, among the people, said Ralph Norman, the only reason I did it because President Trump called me to do it. They still don't understand that it's not the speaker, it's the margin that's key. So in terms of what the Senate wants, they made it clear they want more than one bill. So I don't know what is going to be better. The president would like some quick wins, but they're going to get gummed up when it comes to tax reform. And the reason why Jason Smith, the chairman of Ways and Means, feels that way is because there were people, Republicans, who voted against the tax reform, but they had such a wide margin in the House last time it didn't matter. Well, those people are still there. Here's Senator Lindsey Graham, cut 9.
I'm very worried. I'm very worried that if we don't put border first and get it done, it's going to be a nightmare for our national security. We've got millions of illegal immigrants that President Trump has promised to deport, and he should. Why are we doing mass deportation? Because we had mass illegal immigration. Lakin Riley's murderer was released because there was no bed space to hold him, and he was paroled, and he raped and killed the girl. Right now, we have 41,000 beds. Under the Trump plan, we're going to go to 150,000 beds. We're going to double the number of ICE agents to find people and kick them out. We're going to finish the wall and put technology on the border to shut it down. That cost $100 billion. I'm willing to offset the $100 billion with cuts in other places, but there's no way in hell Democrats are going to give us $100 billion for mass deportation. Every day we delay is a dangerous day for America.
I understand both causes, and Lindsey Graham is fine if there's a 20-vote margin in the House. I'd say go one at a time, get quick wins. But the House has no choice. It's not a favor to Mike Johnson. He explained that to President Trump. He's like, listen, I'm going to lose people on every one of these elements and gain people on every one of these bills. So why don't I put them all together so they can officially say to their constituents to put them there, this is what I voted for. And this is why I voted. I didn't get what I wanted, but I did get this. So that's the problem. Johnson's got a better case. Lindsey Graham makes sense as well. But in this reality, I think I have to go with the speaker on that. On Joe Biden, the fact that the wheels are coming off that 4 years and his cognitive ability is being exposed is something we've been talking about for a long time, really since June. The fact that he keeps coming out so angry, keeps yelling so often, avoiding press conferences daily while giving friendly interviews on his way out, promising two more speeches, one foreign policy, one on his career farewell speech, neither of which is going to be delivered effectively, I am sure, unless they give him that shot of adrenaline he got a couple of State of the Unions ago. But as he leaves, I think that he leaves a terrible legacy, especially because most people are going to go on record and books are going to be written how he really couldn't function as president. He's mentally in decline as almost the day he got it after giving the inaugural address. And now people are being pressed on it. For example, Chuck Schumer. For example, Nancy Pelosi. Why did you oust him? You never made it clear. What exactly changed? You're not really sure. Joe Biden, why did I not stay in? I don't know why I dropped out. Remember when people were praising Joe Biden? Cut 21.
The 82-year-old president of the United States has an incredible record in the 3 years he's been president. And the fact that he mixed up, you know, the president of Egypt with the president of Mexico, I did the same thing around this table.
He's not a young man, but he's completely in possession of his faculties, very lucid, very well informed.
He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been start your tape right now, because I'm about to tell you the truth. This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever.
Okay, I mean, right there, you just have to, if you're Chuck, if you are Joe Scarborough, you should just leave. Especially what's going to come out in the future. And that's going to be played consistently. You mean he's flat out lying to you. Flat out lying. So Chuck Schumer was asked, he never gives interviews, but Chuck Schumer was asked this on, of all places, Meet the Press, Cut 24.
Leader Schumer, what do you say to Americans who feel as though you and other top Democrats misled them about President Biden's mental acuity?
Nope. Look, we didn't. And let's look at President Biden. He's had an amazing record. The legislation we passed, one of the most significant.
Okay, we got it. So he didn't take that opportunity to say, I wasn't aware of how bad it got, or I could just tell you my interaction with him. Instead, he just runs off a litany of things that passed with or without him. When the follow-up question's interesting, too, but I thought this was the follow-up question's even more important. Listen to what he doesn't say. Cut 25.
Do you feel, as we have this conversation today, that President Biden could serve another 4 years had he stayed in the race and potentially won?
Well, I'm not going to speculate. As I said, I think his record is a stellar one, and he'll go down in history as a really outstanding president.
I'm not going to speculate? You were backing him for re-election. Not going to speculate. You're not asking him. You're not asking something, you know, can he, you know, did he win the election? Can he serve 4 years? You're telling me you kicked him out. You went and visited him in Delaware. And you know what that conversation was like. You got to get out. You're going to lose. Now you say it was his decision only. No one believes that. No one believes what you said before. And the follow-up question, we don't want to speculate. That's not a question. That's not an answer. The fact that he wouldn't answer shows you he knows that he's lying. This is Chuck Schumer, Cut 23, on February 13th.
I talk to President Biden, you know, regularly, sometimes several times in a week, or usually several times in a week. His mental acuity is great. It's fine. It's as good as it's been over the years. All this right-wing propaganda that his mental acuity has declined is wrong.
Okay, what happened to the guy on February 13th? What happened to that guy? So the last sparring session I'll give you, and then we'll take a break, and I'll get your take on this. 1-866-408-7669. Simone Sanders goes out there and pretends as if we have not been paying attention. Former chief of staff or press secretary for the vice president. Cut 26.
The question on the table is the president all the way there? And the answer is unequivocally yes. Now, people can say that you feel as though President Biden might be a little too old to do the job, but he is doing the job and his mental acuity is there. So I think that there's a conflation of two things here, is his mental capacity and serving another 4 years as old as he is. But those are two separate things, in my opinion. And look, these people that have known Joe Biden their entire political lives, I know Joe Biden is like, can y'all just please defend me a little more?
I would just say this one thing about the president. It hurt Democrats in November to try to tell the American people something they could see with their own eyes wasn't true.
But it's not true that the president doesn't have the mental acuity.
Of course it is, Simone. American people saw that for themselves in the debate.
What are you saying?
Yes, and Mark Short, former legislative assistant with Trump and then former chief of staff for Vice President Pence, you might think it's what's the big deal, a Republican Democrat. It's a huge deal because he's just saying what everybody knows. And lastly, Jonathan Martin of Politico. How about this? In a follow-up in the same roundtable, Cut 22.
It's not worth defending him, though, because at every turn the last year and a half, he has taken the path of the most indulgent turn for himself rather than the good of the party by running again, by pardoning his son, and now, frankly, by some of these choices for a Medal of Freedom and going to Rome for one last trip. He's not exiting in a way that I think reflects well on his party, and Democrats are deeply, deeply unhappy about it, and they should be.
So good luck with that, guys. No more defenders. But I do not say welcome aboard, because when the country needed you most to stand up, even before the midterms, if you hated Trump that much, if you stood up, if I got some of these comments in 2022 after the midterms, I'd respect it a lot more. You hated Trump so much, and that includes everyone in Politico and Washington Post and New York Times. You want him out. But at 2022, when it wasn't the biggest disaster, you lost the House, but wasn't as big a disaster as you thought, if you just said, President Biden, you got to step aside. You said you were one-termer, and obviously you're failing. you should really step aside. I would respect you a lot. But nobody on the left that I know of said that. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here on a Monday. I'll take your calls next. And at the bottom of the hour, we will welcome in Senator John Cornyn. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Donald Trump has not been known to accept blame for, well, anything at all. And the clock is running. And I think there's a huge challenge ahead for John Thune, but especially Mike Johnson, because of the nature of the House majority and because of the coalition that Johnson is trying to juggle in the House. Look, Donald Trump is going to want victories and want victories fast. And to John Thune's credit, that's why I think Thune wanted to do two big bills, because he wanted to get Trump a big victory first on the border and on energy and on defense spending.
So that is just that's some practical analysis from Politico's Jonathan Martin, just saying that the president's not going to take blame. He's going to make people accountable in the House and Senate. He understands the math, but evidently he's flying the House. I don't know, the whole House board, selected members of the House, over to Mar-a-Lago to discuss this. Over the weekend, Meloni came, Prime Minister of Italy, and then now all of a sudden this came out, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is resigning ahead of Canada. Has a lot to do, in my view. Trump knocked him over the edge because he made him look so weak. They had more threatened tariffs coming over the hill instead of someone like Joe Biden, compliant, not worried about even enforcing the USMCA. So he's gone, and maybe that makes room for somebody a little bit more practical. Just some of your emails here that are coming in. I brought up what one thing that Joe Biden is doing is with Social Security. He decides to enhance and increase payments on Social Security. Well, you might go, wow, isn't that great? Isn't it for seniors? Yeah, maybe there should be a math where they grow closer with inflation. But obviously, when people pay into it, it's not working out. More people are retiring than are working. So they've already went into the trust fund. I think in 2 years it's going to go bankrupt. Joe Biden, by doing this without consulting the incoming administration, just put a hand grenade in Social Security. Now it's going to speed up to bankruptcy another year ahead of time. Now, Ron writes me and says, how would you feel that you paid your retirement and the government withheld a percentage of it? I will not be getting anything for free, but I paid in. I think you would expect the same. Yes, I would. But what you expect dollar for dollar back is non-inflated dollars. So you're actually going to be getting less. So he just made it even. But the bottom line is there's not enough money there. So what is the new math without stopping the reward or award for people who put this money into their retirement? I'm not looking to deny it. But basically, he just said, screw you and screw the country. The same mindset that said, I'm selling the wall. Screw the country. The country paid for the wall. You paid for Social Security. Instead of trying to fix it, finding a way to fix the border, politics. I'm going to blow up Social Security, make it harder for him not to touch it. And I'm going to blow up the border, make it harder for him to build that wall. He'll have to go back to Congress for money that's already been allocated 4 years prior. That's my view. What's yours? I'm going to ask a couple of minutes before we get to Senator John Cornyn. He's going to bring us to all the excitement on Capitol Hill today.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
No, we don't have any indication as to why he specifically chose New Orleans. Again, this is one of our top priorities, is to get an understanding as to not just on the day of the attacks, but the reasoning behind the two previous trips back in October as well as November. But that is a concern for us and a priority for us as well.
Well, that is, the FBI has really stepped up, in my view, in terms of exposing what they know. I'm sure they know a little bit more, but they told us a lot over the weekend. I was shocked. They were able to put together a video montage of all his actions because they recovered those Meta glasses, which I forgot they were even wore. I knew there were goggles. I forgot there were glasses. They haven't really marketed them. But this guy saw it, so he's on a bike and he's on foot. He had the glasses rolling because it was my original speculation. I think I'm getting better at this, that he had to have scoped out New Orleans. You don't just drive up and down and say, okay, that cop car, I'm going to be able to do a 90-degree turn, go right around it and drive up the sidewalk, unless you really study this. And he's been to New Orleans at least twice. Once he taped and, I guess, studied, and he's a tech guy. At least he said he was a tech guy, became a tech guy in the military. So Jabbar was able to get a lot of video out there. We know he cut two or three tapes talking about how he joined ISIS over the summer. Okay. Do you know that in 2023, he also, this terrorist, visited Cairo, Egypt, July 3rd, 2023. He stayed there for a month. What was he doing there? And if there was a military guy that went into these terror neighborhoods in Egypt, I always thought there'd be trigger mechanisms to tell our CIA, because there's such cooperation. And also, it's been both our objectives to stop al-Qaeda, where it all began in Egypt with Zawahiri. It stopped there. Actually, before him, it started in the 1920s. But the terror really fomented itself, and Zawahiri was part of the assassination of Anwar Sadat, that moved over to Pakistan and got killed in Afghanistan. Hooked up with bin Laden. He was the evil doctor. But there's been none of that. There was no cooperation, so I want to know how we missed it. Then he went to Canada, and then he recently went to Tampa, Florida. Now, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is he's out of money. He's living in a dilapidated motorhome or a mobile home, and it's a lease, and you got to see it. There's nothing there. He's got three marriages, all dissolved. He's got child support payments he just doesn't make. And he can't get his career going. So he decides he's going to join ISIS, and suddenly he's got money to travel. And they did say some of the explosive material not found in this country. Not found in this country. So who provided it to him? And are we not fortunate that those IEDs did not go off on the French Quarter? Because they were placed in this video of it. It's amazing. There's video of him being placed, these handlebar, you know, these big coolers where they roll on the ground. You see him at a lot of big sporting events. And you just leave him there, look at normal coolers, and he sits there and he holds it, and he gradually lets go, and he gradually just slowly walks away. Now, they say the detonations didn't go off, or perhaps thought he was going to live longer through that shootout and would have time to detonate and distract everybody else. So you can imagine this. His flat blows up that he was doing the Airbnb. That goes on fire. Then you have explosions strategically placed in the French Quarter. And then you have the actual running over people down the sidewalk. And he walks out with a gun and starts shooting people. So I don't know how many got shot and how many got run over. Eventually we're going to get this. So here's what's really disturbing. The city of New Orleans spent $2.3 billion to harden the infrastructure target back in 2017. They knew they were going to be a target. Where's that money? Where is the money? The mayor said they built steel bollards. They immediately malfunctioned. Believe it or not, they say the beads got caught in them. And then they went out and bought 48 archers. What are archers? They're designed by this Meridian Barriers company. They're designed to stop a 5,500-pound truck going 60 miles an hour. You strategically place them in the road to make up for the bollards that don't work, which is unacceptable, but you didn't tell the superintendent, or no one has any system of telling the new superintendent, who's 100 years old, looks way out of her element, that these are out there. And when they did deploy them after the attack, according to Meridian, they're deployed incorrectly because the wheels are still down, which means if you hit it, it's going to move rather than stop an ongoing truck. Do you believe such idiocy? Here's Bill Cassidy, one informed us, Cut 32.
If everything as you laid out is as you said it, absolutely. There has to be leadership at the top. And if the leadership failed as you describe it, then absolutely there has to be consequences. Period. End of story. Now, I think we're going to have a kind of complete review of everything from top to bottom. And if that's the way it ends up shaking out completely, she should be replaced.
Of course she should be replaced. She said we had a plan and the terrorists defeated it. Right there is your resignation. Put that in your letter. I had a plan, and the terrorists defeated it. Okay, goodbye. Thank you. Don't tell me you can't get enough cops. Bring somebody else in there. Put the FBI in charge until somebody competent can take over. Evidently, she got fired from her last job and ends up here. Joining us now is Senator John Cornyn. Busy day, judiciary, finance, intelligence, all part of his job description. And today, that's certifying the really good day, gets to certify President Trump's second term in office. Senator Cornyn, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be with you on the snowy Monday.
Yeah, I know. How bad are the roads?
It's not too bad that they're clearing them here. I mean, the difference between Washington, D.C. and Austin, Texas, where I live, is that they actually have snowplow machines here, and they're prepared to deal with this. So I'll be making my way into the Capitol to certify the vote, as you said earlier, about 1 o'clock today.
There should not be any drama with this, right?
No, I don't know. I can't imagine. I think it ought to go smoothly, and I'm anxious to get to work.
I mean, this is a resounding electoral victory, and it's going to be especially pleasing for a lot of Republicans, maybe like yourself, that the vice president's got to reign over it, because being that so many disparaging things that she said about you guys, obviously that happens in a campaign, but also what Joe Biden's doing on the way out. I mean, he's really trying to put roadblocks in your way.
It's unbelievable to me. I mean, he's just been a wrecking ball. Every single thing he knows he could not otherwise do, he's tried to throw in our path. Fortunately, we'll be able to undo most of it. But unfortunately, it'll also take some time to do that. It just shows you how irresponsible the Biden-Harris administration has been. And, of course, we know you can't trust a single thing they say because, you know, whether it's the Hunter Biden pardon or just you go down the whole list, it's just one lie after another. And it's really, really discouraging to me.
Well, a couple of things are happening. Number one, he's banning offshore drilling for like 600,000 miles or whatever it is. Is that simply, you know, legislative and you have this legal background as a judge. Is it easy to reverse that with an executive order? Or do you have to pass a piece of legislation?
No, President Trump can come in and rescind executive orders on day one.
Okay, good.
And I expect him to do that. Other administrative agency rules may have to be challenged in court, but we also have a kind of an arcane procedure known as the Congressional Review Act, where we can go in and vote to repeal
right.
Different administrative agency rules during a given period of time. So I think that's going to be our focus starting day one and starting with the border.
Even though you guys don't want to reverse any Medicare or Social Security benefits, you do have to fix it. Social Security is going to go bankrupt. And yesterday, President Biden signed the Social Security Fairness Act, paving the way for nearly 3 million public workers to boost their Social Security benefits. That just accelerates the bankruptcy. As much as I want people to get what they put into it, you guys got to find a way to make the math work. That's not going to help.
No, that will accelerate the insolvency by about 6 months. I know 6 months doesn't sound like a long time, but, you know, unfortunately, this is one of those things like the national debt that just keep getting kicked down the road. But if there's anything we've learned from this election, it's that the American people want the border fixed and they want to quit the wasteful Washington spending and to deal with the debt and our fiscal responsibilities. So that's going to be my focus, certainly. As soon as President Trump takes his hand off the Bible on January the 20th.
So you got a big decision to make about how the agenda is going to pass and in what order. For the most part, Senator Thune, and maybe you believe so too, feel like you like to see the energy, the defense, the tax reform all broken out separately. The House says the only way we could pass it if it's all together. Here's the speaker yesterday, cut three.
Do you lose those lawmakers on the border if the tax issues are not in that one bill? Is that the fear?
Well, actually, that's the benefit of doing it all together, because no one's going to love every element of a large package like that. But there'll be enough elements in there to pull everyone along. They'll be able to justify not getting all of their preferences on some of their big issues, because there'll be so many other very important pieces to that one piece of legislation. So I think keeping it together is how we'll actually get it done, and there's some real value to that.
Do you understand the tactics there, and is that clear thinking in your mind?
Yeah, I wish the speaker luck. We know he's got a thin margin, and that's what President Trump says he wants to do. So I assume we'll all put our shoulder to the wheel and work hard to get it done. But, you know, it basically boils down to the math. I mean, can we get all of the Republicans in the House and all the Republicans in the Senate on the same page? The more things you put in a bill, the more complex it gets, like the speaker said. But there are also some countervailing considerations, because there may be some things that people consider sweeteners or incentives to vote for a package that includes things that they maybe aren't too wild about. So this is going to be a big, difficult challenge, but I think that's the challenge we have to deal with.
January 14th, Pete Hegseth will go up for his hearings to be Secretary of Defense. John Thune indicated to President Trump, reportedly according to NBC, that Pete Hegseth has the votes. Does he have your vote?
He does. I've known Pete since he came to the Hill to lobby on behalf of veterans years ago, even before he became famous on Fox. And so he's a good man. I think, you know, he's made mistakes in his life. I don't know anybody that hasn't made mistakes. But I think he's ready to take on the job. I know his heart's in the right place. And it looks to me like President Trump is going to ensure that he has a good team there to support him in his efforts to reform the Pentagon. We need to do a lot of work there to prepare for to reestablish deterrence in a very dangerous world.
I know. The thing is, too, you got to, in real time, be able to do a successful audit and maybe reorienting money while putting more money into the Pentagon. Feeding that beast is necessary, but I think taming the beast is almost as necessary, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The Pentagon's been almost intractable. They call it the Valley of Death, which is the which was what technology has to traverse in order to make its way to the Pentagon. They're used to big platforms like the F-35 that cost hundreds of millions of dollars. And as you've seen in Ukraine and elsewhere, new technology like drones has taken a new and important role. And it's also cheaper, and things that are getting into the hands of the warfighter quicker. So I think there's going to be two things that Pete Hegseth is going to have to do along with his team at the Pentagon. That is to try to make the Pentagon more responsive to the innovators and the incredible technology that American entrepreneurs are able to create, but to make sure that our warfighters get the weapons and the tools they need in order to establish deterrence. We don't want to fight any wars. We don't have to. The best way to do that is through strength, as Ronald Reagan said.
I hear you. There's a couple of Democrats nominated and one pro-union, one union person for labor out in Oregon. So you got RFK, you have Tulsi Gabbard, and I know the labor secretary position, her name eludes me right now. Is there anybody you're voting against right now, unless you're convinced otherwise?
You know, Brian, I believe that the president is entitled to his team, absent extraordinary circumstances. Now, we haven't completed the background checks through the FBI, and, of course, the hearings are not just a formality. It's where people get to ask questions, and we'll see how the nominees perform. But my gut tells me that President Trump is going to get his team. But it remains to be seen whether, you know, something unexpected like with the Matt Gaetz nomination pops up.
Here's what Bill Cassidy said about RFK Jr., Cut 17.
How is RFK Jr. faring among Democrats on your committee?
I haven't spoken to him about it. I just don't know. I will meet with him this coming week. I look forward to the interview. I agree with him on some things and disagree on others. The food safety, I think the ultra-processed food is a problem. Vaccinations, he's wrong on. And so I just look forward to having a good dialogue with him on that.
So I just think hearings are going to matter a lot with him. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I do. I do, Brian. But remember, these cabinet nominees are not free agents. I mean, they're not going to be able to do anything and everything they want. They're going to be responsive to President Trump's policy agenda. And I assume that if they're not willing to pursue President Trump's policy agenda, that he will ask them to leave, as he should. But there's going to be disagreements. A lot of these things are complex, and that's to be expected. But I think what we need is transparency. We need to have people to be able to understand what the facts are. And to be honest, I think there's a lot of skepticism about some of the reports in the mainstream media, the legacy media, about what his views are. So just like Tulsi Gabbard, just like some of the other nominees. I think that's why it's important to have these hearings and background checks and to have the one-on-one interviews like I've been having with all the nominees.
All right, Senator John Cornyn, thanks so much for your time. Busy day, historic day, as a president reenters the office after losing the office, first time ever except for Grover Cleveland. Thanks, Senator.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. And that's what January 6th means. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The bear, the penguin, baby reindeer. These are not just things found in RFK's freezer. These are TV shows nominated tonight.
That is so funny. I thought she was fantastic.
She was, I agree, she was very good.
Nikki Glaser.
Yes.
So she got that job, and she said, I got the job for roasting and doing my roast on the Tom Brady show, on the Tom Brady roast, but she wasn't mean-spirited. Ricky Gervais was hysterical, but he was kind of mean, right? I mean, there was just killing everybody. Everything was accurate, but I thought this was kind of cool. Also, she had one great line when it comes to voting. Do we have that?
Oh, we do have that one. That one's, I believe, 41.
Okay.
I'm Nikki Glaser, and I am absolutely thrilled to be your host tonight. Thank you. Now, some of you may know me as a stand-up comedian and from my appearances on Roast, but I am not here to roast you tonight. I want you to know that, and how could I, really? You're all so famous, so talented, so powerful. I mean, you could really do anything. I mean, except tell the country who to vote for, but it's okay. You'll get them next time. If there is one. I'm scared. Ariana, hold my finger. Thank you. Thank you.
The only thing I didn't get is Ariana, hold my finger.
So in the Wicked press tour, Ariana Grande was holding the other actress's finger, which is a picture that went wild. Like, just like her three fingers, like holding her one finger as opposed to like holding hands or whatever. It was ridiculous.
Oh, I did not know that. Do you know that, or did you have to read about that?
I mean, I after she said it, I remembered it, but yeah, just it was just this weird, like, zoomed in of her just holding her one pointer finger.
Well, it was one of the better award shows. I watched some of it just to be prepared for this, and I love the host.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian.
Thanks for being there, everybody. Brian Kilmeade coming in from Midtown Manhattan, where we are the proud home of congestion pricing, first one in America. Just go to the middle of the city, with the most popular city in the world, the most crowded city in the world. It will now cost you extra money. So the most taxed state has the first tax ever in the middle of a city, forcing people into the subways where it's never been more dangerous. Isn't that great? Everything's bad about it. Michael Goodwin standing by to talk about it. General Keith Kellogg a little bit later. He's in charge of bringing peace between Ukraine and Russia. Donald Trump has asked him to do that. He's already working on it. It's going to be a big hour. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Jabbar placed the first IED at Bourbon and St. Peter Street at 1:53 a.m. Jabbar placed the second IED in a bucket-type cooler at 2:20 a.m. on Bourbon and Toulouse Streets.
There you go. We have New Orleans terror. A lot of information after a slow start when they said it wasn't a terrorist attack on New Year's Eve. We learned so much more about the killer and becoming apparent he could have been stopped before attacking the city, and if tracked, never would have gotten to Louisiana. I'll explain.
Number two.
I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole damn life. And I know them. I know how they think. Not a joke.
Desperate, angry, and exposed. Biden furious, not a reality show, by the way, which would actually be a good one. Biden furiously trying to save his legacy with speeches, pardons, irresponsible awards, and executive orders. The truth is coming out. He wasn't all there when he was there, and fewer are trying to defend him.
Number one.
Well, I hope we have full attendance. We got a big snowstorm coming to D.C., and we encourage all of our colleagues, do not leave town. Stay here, because, as you know, the Electoral Count Act requires this on January 6th at 1 p.m. So whether we're in a blizzard or not, we are going to be in that chamber.
Blizzard be damned. Look for Congress to certify Trump's historic electoral victory on, yes, January 6th. The next hurdle, confirming his nominees before the inauguration and debate on his first major legislation, has House and Senate divided. For now, we'll discuss. And let's bring in Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist. And you can follow him, MGoodwin_NYPost. Michael, welcome back.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
So you're one of the few people, you wrote a column on Sunday, how angry Joe Biden's getting out. Now, you want to have Senator Schumer talking about his legacy and everything he accomplished, but you could tell that he realizes he wasn't good. And listen to this. This is a non-sequitur angry answer to somebody who just asked him about what is his thoughts about leaving as the oldest president. Cut 20.
Actions we take. The only thing, why being the oldest president, I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole damn life. And I know them. I know how they think. Not a joke. What really hurts is when we talk about immigration the way we do.
What's he even talking about? I mean, is it, he doesn't give press conferences, but he takes he'll take wild questions from the press who are desperate to get something off on him that's unscripted. Your thoughts?
Well, look, I think, Brian, earlier you used the magic word, and it's all about legacy. Everything he's doing now, I think, is trying to reshape his legacy from this doddering, failing, corrupt president to, this good guy who cared about the environment. He cared about minorities. He was a friend to the downtrodden, to the working class. I mean, that's very much what's going on here. Going to the Amazon to give away money.
Angola.
All of these things. Yes, and look also at the commutation of the killers, right? It wasn't just my son. I have a weakness for all of those who are suffering. I mean, on and on and on. You can shape these things because of the presidential shape machine that comes out of the White House. You can try to shape all these things. And if our listeners remember, Brian, back in 2021, soon after he took office, Joe Biden met with a bunch of historians who encouraged him, John Meacham among them, Doris Kearns Goodwin. They encouraged him to go big, to be the second coming of FDR. And therefore, I think it's not inconsequential that his new Green Deal had echoes, of course, of the New Deal, of FDR's New Deal. The problem was the idea was pretentious. It was silly. America was not in the depths of a Great Depression. Already, as I wrote in the column, incomes were rising, GDP was solid. So this idea that we needed a program that was like the Great Depression needed is just ridiculous. And what you got was a lot of wasted money and the highest inflation in generations. And so that's what he did. He forgot the economy. Then, of course, there's the border. All of these things that drove him. And then finally, the doddering performance in that June debate against Donald Trump really sealed his fate. So a lot of, I think, everything he's doing now is trying to recast himself as a different person than the person he was as president.
Yeah, he doesn't realize, too, when he does these green things, these green pushes and bans oil and gas, how it affects the average person and the taxes he puts on there. He keeps saying things that we know are inaccurate. Yesterday, his whole party was saying, you know, the Republicans want to pass tax cuts for the rich and billionaires. What are you talking about? They're looking to renew the tax reform they put through in 2018. The middle class already benefited most of it, and the public already signed off on it. They know that's not true. They said they're looking to get rid of Medicare or take money away from Medicare and Social Security. They know that's not true. And when he comes out and bans offshore oil drilling, people know how that's going to affect us and our allies in the middle of a war in Europe. So it's just crazy what he continues to try to get away with. And I thought it was interesting that people are fed up with him, too. Listen to Jonathan Martin of Politico, cut 22.
It's not worth defending him, though, because at every turn the last year and a half, he has taken the path of the most indulgent turn for himself rather than the good of the party by running again, by pardoning his son, and now, frankly, by some of these choices for the Medal of Freedom, going to Rome for one last trip. He's not exiting in a way that I think reflects well on his party, and Democrats are deeply, deeply unhappy about it, and they should be.
Wow. I was sitting there. I was amazed by that. And they were saying that no one wants to defend his cognitive disability anymore. And that's what he was building on. Now everyone's saying what you've been saying and I've been saying from day one. He's not all there. We saw that in the debates to get the nomination in 2020. Remember, he was nowhere. He was failing in real time until Bernie Sanders emerged as the leader and likely nominee. There was panic. And then he was elevated by James Clyburn. I never stopped looking at that car wreck.
Right. I never thought Joe Biden would get the nomination in the first place. I mean, anybody who's watched Washington for decades, you can't think Joe Biden is the answer to any problem. And yet it was the hate Donald Trump. You know, if we rewind our memories, Brian, back to those days, how much the Democrats had waged war against Donald Trump for 3 years before that whole primary process started, impeachments, et cetera, and they were determined that they would defeat Donald Trump. It didn't matter by who, just so it was a Democrat. And so all of the things that the Democrats did, and I would just say, they kept that same attitude on this year, which is why they were prepared to run Joe Biden again until that debate debacle, which, you know, as you say, we all knew that about him. A, we knew he was corrupt. He is the big guy in all those deals, and that's obvious. His son, you know, I'll never pardon my son. Well, of course he will pardon his son. Why did he have to lie about it? On and on and on. The way they used the Justice Department to go after their enemies, starting with the January 6th people, many of whom were overcharged for things that really would not be a crime any other day. And yet, you know, they've weaponized the law enforcement system against Republicans, against Donald Trump particularly. And all of this are part of his record. That's why I think he is doing all of these things now to make people forget that. Let's talk about the environment. Let's go to the Amazon, right? Let's do things that the historians will record as my legacy, not what we see before us now.
I want you to hear Chuck Schumer, rare interview on Meet the Press. Now he's in the minority status. Cut 24.
Leader Schumer, what do you say to Americans who feel as though you and other top Democrats misled them about President Biden's mental acuity?
Nope. Look, we didn't. And let's look at President Biden. He's had an amazing record.
Obviously, he goes on the New Deal, all the stuff that he passed compares him to LBJ.
Yes. I mean, that's what the Democrats got, and the public turned against it. And so what did they have? They have nothing to do. But of course they hid his decline. Schumer was one of those who said, oh, he's fine, sharp as a tack, all of that crap. They all lied. So did the media. They all lied. They were lacking curiosity. And it's all because they did not want to help Donald Trump. I mean, it was a lie with a purpose. It wasn't incidental. It wasn't that they were caught off guard. This was an intentional deception designed to keep Donald Trump from making any hay out of it.
So, Mike, I'll give you that.
Thankfully, the public saw through it.
I'll give you that. If they say, oh, to beat Donald Trump will do anything. All right, fine. Now, I wouldn't agree with that, but okay, that's your objective. I got to stop Donald Trump. All right, fine. Then if 2022 pops up, they know that he's failing. They know he's not making decisions. They know he can't work 4 hours a day. So in 2022, if they pop up and they say all the pressure, the rumors from behind the scenes, pressure on Biden not to run again, then I'd say, okay, that's practical. 2 years, so queue it up for the next, having a true nomination process. You're admitting that he can't do the job. Maybe let the vice president step in. But instead, they covered up and were willing to let him run again until he fell apart in June. So listen to this now. Cut 25.
Do you feel, as we have this conversation today, that President Biden could serve another 4 years had he stayed in the race and potentially won?
Well, I'm not going to speculate. As I said, I think his record is a stellar one, and he'll go.
I'm not going to speculate.
Look, I think that the problem the Democrats had was that Biden refused to step down, that he refused not to run. And, you know, that would have continued had he not had that debate. And, Brian, it's worth looking back again at that debate, because it was very early, right? It was in June. Debates don't usually happen in June. They happen in the fall. But Biden wanted and insisted on that debate because his donors were getting concerned. And the polls showed Trump building a nice lead. And so in June of the election year, Biden's campaign spent $50 million in ads in the swing states and scheduled the debate to try to put down all of this talk that he wasn't able to run again. And, of course, it all blew up. But I think it's worth remembering that he refused to go. He was in denial about his own condition, about the political mindset of the country, how unhappy people were. Remember, just a few months before that, he was saying Bidenomics is working. Bidenomics worked. I mean, he believed this crap himself, that he was a successful president, and the media let him get away with it. It's only when the media began to see that Donald Trump was going to win did they begin to call for his head. Don't forget, the New York Times was fine with him running until the debate.
I hear you. And lastly, when it comes to what's happening in this city, congestion pricing, this is not a New York story. This is a national story. It's starting out at $9. You know it's going to be $19 in 5 years, and they're not going to stop. They charge us for the tunnels. They charge us for the bridges. Now they're charging us to go through the middle of the city.
You know, Brian, I've always thought, I've opposed this from the beginning, but I've always thought there's an inherent contradiction. It's allegedly because of congestion that this fee goes into effect. If it's successful, then the MTA will not get the money it needs. If enough cars and trucks don't come, the MTA will not get the money it needs for its capital projects. That's the excuse for this tax. If it doesn't work and people keep coming, then congestion will not be solved. So either way, the program is bound to fail. And there will just be higher taxes somewhere else, bigger congestion. I mean, it is congestion as in con. That's what it is. It's a big con designed to suck more money out of taxpayers because the city and the state can never have enough. You know, they have spent over a combined more than $5 billion on the migrant issue. They hope the congestion tax will raise $1 billion a year. If they had only saved $1 billion from the migrant spending, they wouldn't need this. But it's about punishing people for coming into Manhattan. I mean, it is insane, given the condition of the subways, the dangers of the subways. The causes of congestion are bicycle racks and everything else that the city has done to banish cars. I mean, we're now in the third generation of city traffic commissioners who are anti-car. They all want to ban the car from the city. This is the first step.
Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Interesting times. Michael Goodwin, New York Post. Thanks.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
Back in a moment.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Let's go right to the phones. Melody, USNWLNI in Forest, Virginia. Melody.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for call. I'm not sure if this would help my sister, the Social Security Fairness Act. She is, my sister's 77, worked her whole life, paid into Social Security, joined the school system in her 50s, and they stopped her taking Social Security out of her check and gave her a pension. She now is living on $800 a month, can't get her husband Social Security when he dies because she is bound to this silly pension and would have made more in Social Security. So if this helps her, I will be grateful. She served her community. She worked her whole life. And
yeah, I know what you mean. What I want them to do is work on it. Don't get other people put. Don't try to put one president in a tough spot as opposed to do what's best for the country. So you got to work on it with smart actuaries and accountants and economists and say, okay, how do we make this so people can live on this? How do we make it so people play into it, get their money out? But if I just go, hey, by the way, I'm going to forgive all your student loans. By the way, I'm going to upgrade your Social Security. By the way, Medicare, I'm going to downgrade your deductible. And then I'm sitting there with the bill. I'm not against seniors or people who need medical aid, but I want to be able to do what's best for the country systematically, not politically.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's not worth defending him, though, because at every turn the last year and a half, he has taken the path of the most indulgent turn for himself rather than the good of the party by running again, by pardoning his son, and now, frankly, by some of these choices for the Medal of Freedom, going to Rome for one last trip. He's not exiting in a way that I think reflects well on his party, and Democrats are deeply, deeply unhappy about it, and they should be.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. That was Politico's commentator, which kind of surprised me to see it on Politico. In fact, I had to go look up his title again. That was Jonathan Martin on Meet the Press yesterday, where he was fed up. And part of the reason I think he's fed up is because he wanted Joe Biden to win. He wanted Democrats to prevail. He didn't want Donald Trump back in office. That's my opinion after watching him for months. But it was impossible to miss the fact that there's no way Joe Biden is acting in the best interest of his party. And maybe it's because he watched what Barack Obama was doing. That is certainly the premise of Julian Epstein. Julian joins us now, former Democratic chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee and obviously an attorney, and joins us again. Julian, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
You're right. The end of the Obama era has officially arrived with a deep sense of betrayal among Democratic voters. Betrayal in what way?
Well, I think, Brian, that there is a deep sense of betrayal that Democratic voters feel about what I call the Democrats' Politburo, Schumer, Pelosi, Obama, Jeffries, who all participated and really led the gaslighting of the American public that Biden was fit for a second term. It's been clear. Anybody watching, listening, reading the Wall Street Journal reporting knows that in early 2021, it was clear that Biden was not up for the job, that his staff was shielding him from members of the cabinet, members of Congress, from the media, that they didn't feel that he was able to go into unscripted environments because he was losing his capacity.
Because you know so many Democrats, I'm wondering, were you hearing that from the people that you know, colleagues that you know, as early as 2021? Because everyone's saying it now, but did you know that was happening then?
As you know, I wrote about it in 23, but I pointed it out to Democrats, Brian. I said to my friends, and everyone was engaged in this denialism because Democrats suffer from a culture of groupthink. But you don't need to hear it from other Democrats. All you need to know is in August of 2021, when Joe Biden said all of his military advisors agreed that they should completely pull out all of the military capacities, the troops, the experts from Afghanistan. When his military advisors were saying the opposite, they were saying if you had kept a skeletal crew of 5,000, you could have held up the Karzai government. Afghanistan wouldn't have fallen. You could have to the Taliban and now to ISIS. That he wasn't even aware what his military advisors were telling him about Afghanistan. He went on George Stephanopoulos and he said that all of his military advisors agreed on a complete pullout. Well, he clearly didn't have his capacities in August 2021. So you didn't need to hear it from other Democrats. It was obvious to everyone who was paying attention. And there were hundreds of examples after 21 that showed that Biden wasn't up for the job. And Democrats sort of participated in this gaslighting to the American public that he was ready for a second term when they were preaching all of this moral superiority about democracy. There's nothing more undermining to democracy than gaslighting, lying to the public that the guy, the most powerful man in the world, is up for the job when he's not. So I think Obama, right, and Schumer and Pelosi bear a lot of the blame for this. I think if there was a recall effort and you could put the question to voters, they would recall them from their leadership positions, even though these are sort of, you know, these are not formal positions. They are positions of influence within the party. But I think people have sort of lost trust in them. I think the Obama era is also over because, you know, Obama, the second term of Obama signaled really the beginning of this religion called demography is destiny, where Democrats just simply believe if they shower different demographic minority groups with all kinds of welfare patronage and rhetorical patronage about victimhood, that they would forever vote Democrats. And I think that was a faulty theory that developed in about 2012 and 2013. It's sort of the religion that's governed the Democrats for the last 12 years. And it proved to be a very false idol, a very false worship when the party, the demography is destiny, forced the party to go so far left on identity politics. Everyone is a victim. The system is unfair. You know, we have more opportunity in this system than any system that humankind has ever produced. And people just started to think that Democrats had lost common sense. They felt it in
their
America's
wallets. A terrible place, a racist place for white people only.
People don't believe that. Black people don't believe that. If you poll black and brown people about questions of affirmative action and all of the stuff that went along with identity politics, whether it's gender or whether it's race preferences, they don't believe it. So they didn't believe the cultural left ideological religion that destiny, demography is destiny, led the Democrats to. And they didn't like what they saw in the economic results because the whole premise of the philosophy was to grow the government, as grow the welfare state as much as you can, and then shower people with patronage. Student loans is an example of that. Build Back Better, $5.6 trillion of greater welfare spending was an example of that. Even parts of the Green New Deal, which is, you know, hopefully some of that is successful, but the criticism of that is that there's a lot of corporate patronage going on there. So what Democrats stopped doing in 2012, Brian, during the second phase of the Obama administration, was they went towards big government patronage and they stopped building. And the reason that I think Democrats lost so badly was because they are a party that has perceived all about identity politics, big government spending, managed decline on the global scene, and they've stopped building. They've stopped building in a meaningful way, particularly for working men and women of America, as we go into the fourth phase of the Industrial Revolution without really a plan for them. And that's why there's so much angst and so much anxiety amongst working Americans. And that's what Donald Trump has tapped into.
And you say some 70% of voters say they're disgusted with the media. And you say it's hard to blame them considering the media cover up of President Biden's decline. It all figures into the same thing. And a lot of people don't realize, too, and don't remember that there was a reason why I think he lost 63 seats in his first midterm election. People say, well, you always lose in a midterm. But he started out with 60 or 7% approval rating. America couldn't wait for this guy. There was a very handsome, charismatic guy, was selling out places in Berlin, squares in Berlin.
Yeah.
And he had all the money. No one blamed him for the collapse of the economy in 2008. President Biden, Bush left with, I think, 30% approval rating. And it all fell apart with Obamacare, the way they did it, the way they executed it, and things that weren't getting done. Now, Barack Obama has benefited. He's going to be the first billionaire former president. But the party hasn't.
That's right. So not only was the demography is destiny and sort of the identity politics became sort of the woke religion for Democrats, but you saw a massive shadow government that started to develop, a substructure that started to develop to enforce the ideological move to the left. These were state government budgets grew enormously under Obama and then Biden. You had the consultant class, the donor class, the philanthropic class. All of these grew to be huge, huge parts of the shadow government that grew up, that is sort of got loads and loads of cash during the sort of the COVID spending spree, and then even the Biden spending spree. So you had that. And then you had, as I point out, a former New York Times reporter, sort of the whole cancel culture really started in many ways from the White House as a way to sell Obamacare. The idea that you would sort of, you know, involve these affiliate Democratic and left-wing public intellectuals to not only sell an idea, but to shame people who disagreed with it and try to cancel people that disagreed with it. And as I point out in the piece, there's this former New York Times reporter does a very nice job elaborating exactly how the cancel culture grew to sell right. Obamacare, sell the Iran nuclear deal, and then ultimately to shut down any questioning of the Hunter Biden laptop, the COVID lab leak theories, whether the shutdowns made sense. And this is also part of the lineage of the Obama years. And to be fair to Obama, some of this stuff grew out from his second administration in a way that he himself couldn't even control.
I know.
You remember in 2019 when he tried to scold wokeness and he said, you know, look, black and brown people, for example, have agency and they shouldn't depend on the government wardship as their road to nirvana. And when he said things like that, and when he would question whether sort of gender extremism had gone too far, right. He got a lot of pushback.
So and I remember he got a lot of praise in 2013, too, when he had his Reverend Wright came out and started ranting about the white devil. And he said, look, you have to understand, that was from a different time. And he talked about how we moved on and America got better since those days of segregation. You also point out when it comes to the Middle East, if you think about his foreign policy, it's a flat out disaster. Remember the Russians moved and took Crimea during his time. Remember, he decapitated Libya and had no plan for the next day. Now it's a lawless right. land, mostly dominated by Russia. Remember, it was his idea to take a peaceful Iraq and pull all our troops out. And then we got ISIS and we had to fight our way back in with the Iranians who haven't left yet. Then he had the red line, which he refused to back up, which, of course, we lost total credibility in that area, made things a whole lot worse until Trump came in. And then you have the continuation of this process of paying Iran in order to stop them, their nuclear program. And now you write it's been put to waste and showed how folly, show it's pure folly, as Netanyahu is the one who decapitated Hezbollah, is destroying Hamas and emasculated Iran. That's the path to peace.
There are two pillars to the Obama foreign policy, which I think are now in the dustbin. One is the loss or the breakdown of American deterrence. And you could see that with the Crimean annexation by Putin. And you can see it with Obama's bluffing on the red line with the use of chemical gas in Syria. He sort of stood still while bad people on the global scene did bad things, and he looked like a paper tiger. That's the first thing. The second thing was his philosophy, which I think is also in the dustbin now, which you could give half of the Middle East to Iran and let them colonize Syria, colonize Lebanon, colonize Yemen, colonize Gaza, and that you could somehow negotiate with them by giving them pallets of cash, and that would have a good ending. And Biden continued that policy. Biden's policy, every time Israel had looked like they were about to become victorious in Rafah and southern Lebanon, Biden would publicly exhort Israel to de-escalate, which is exactly what Iran wanted to hear. Israel rejected that. They went in, they decapitated Hezbollah. They are decapitating Hamas. Right. They will do so with the Houthis. They have completely rejected the Obama-Biden doctrine, and they have proven to be right. And I think that in retrospect, the sort of the Biden-Obama philosophy that you can negotiate with terrorists, you can give them tons of cash, and they will do what you want them to do, that's just sort of subject to ridicule at this point.
Got it. Julian Epstein, thanks so much. Great column. Appreciate it.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Yeah, the end of Obama, the end of Obama regime happens. It will come to an end as soon as Joe Biden leaves. And it's been a disaster. Foreign policy, I'd say it should be the George Costanza. Whatever Joe Biden does, do the opposite and you'll be successful. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Where is Timothy Chalamet? Timothy, where? Hi, Timothy. Can I just say, you have the most gorgeous eyelashes on your upper lip. I think this is just such a good look. Timothy, you're just so great at playing these, like, beloved eccentrics. Dylan, Willy Wonka. Who's next? Adam Sandler? Please. Actually, your name sounds like something Adam Sandler would say. Chalamet. Timothy Chalamet. Oh, yes, Timothy Chalamet. I think Sandler's here. Sandler, can I get a Chalamet?
Hey, Chalamet.
Oh, Chalamet. A good Chalamet to you, sir.
So that was pretty cool. That was, I'll tell you what. I don't even know who she was before this. Did you even know who she was, Nikki Glaser?
I mean, you knew from the Tom Brady roast.
No, before Tom Brady.
I'd probably seen clips of her, and I wouldn't be able to put a name to the face, but.
So she did an interview prior to this, and she says that, you were so ruthless when you're going after these guys. Has anything ever hurt your feelings? He said, yeah. One comedian went up, and I forgot his name, and he said, Nikki Glaser has no ass.
And that's what offended her.
And that offended her. And she goes, because it's always been a personal problem. I always said to myself, I really have none. And the thing is, you could always get one by squats, don't you think?
To a point, or a Brazilian butt lift.
Right. Or fake it.
Yes.
Like Kardashian.
Exactly.
Right. But evidently that hurt her feelings. But to me, you can never say your feelings are hurt if you're going to go down there and go down that road of insulting people personally.
No, I would agree. I think your answer is actually probably pretty funny, though, right? Just like everyone, you grow up with one, like a few insecurities. When someone like nails it, it hits you a little deeper.
All right, let's go to another. Here she's talking about how little influence Hollywood has on politics.
I'm Nikki Glaser, and I am absolutely thrilled to be your host tonight. Thank you. Now, some of you may know me as a stand-up comedian and from my appearances on Roast, but I am not here to roast you tonight. I want you to know that. And how could I, really? You're all so famous, so talented, so powerful. I mean, you could really do anything. I mean, except tell the country who to vote for. But it's okay. You'll get them next time. If there is one. I'm scared. Ariana, hold my finger. Thank you.
See, they were kind of nervous of that. You hear the delay? And then they just laughed and they realized. I mean, every celebrity in the world came out and he obviously failed. Now, the last one was, I saw this stat that 87% of people who are actors and actresses, 87% don't earn enough to make their health benefits from their union. That's how, when you're thinking about a career, that's what you should think about before you jump into it. For example, if you have a way to earn money and then you jump into it, if you have an entrepreneurial instinct about you, do both. So have enough money in order for you to pursue this, but understand that it's going to be extremely tough. And that's where this joke comes in.
And what a night. I look out and I see some of the hardest working actors in show business. And by that, I mean your servers. Yes. Yes, give it up.
Right. I know it's a little bit insulting, but it's so accurate.
Oh, it's completely true, and everyone knows it. And I'm sure all those servers are thrilled to be at the Globes, right, serving people, potentially making all the connections with people winning awards.
Well, and this is, of course, we're talking about the Golden Globes. I don't understand the one speech that everybody is talking about.
Oh, the Demi Moore.
Demi Moore comes out, and she says, I finally have made it, 45 years of acting. I finally feel like I belong. I mean, she had box office hits. She's had acclaimed hits. She was in the number one General Hospital and was at its zenith. She was one of the stars there. What more does she need? That's more validation than anyone gets in anything else.
I read you tell all the kids and whatnot, awards don't mean anything. But I guess she really wanted those accolades from her colleagues.
And who are these people? The international press.
But now she has the Globe to put in her office.
Hey, by the way, I don't need it, but it would be nice to see everybody. February 15th in Jacksonville at the Florida Theater, BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs. You'll reclaim your patriotism as well as your motivation and inspiration.
From the Fox News News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, but around the country, around the world. Yes, we are the site of the first congestion pricing ever in this country. Hopefully the last, and hopefully this dissipates, but I'm not confident it will. When's the last time you saw a toll just disappear? But they're going to charge people to come to the middle of the city. A lot of people don't have a choice. You're delivering bread. You're working. You have to get to a firefight. You have to go to the fire department. You know, you're a cop. You are an emergency worker making $18 an hour. Now you're making, and then now you have to give your first half of that money at $9 away. Think that doesn't add up over a week? Also breaking news, Prime Minister Trudeau has just said in Canada he's going to resign as soon as Canada can pick another nominee for run for prime minister next year. So he's discussed with his family. He realized how unpopular he is, so he is not running on the Liberal Party. So I don't know how that's related to Donald Trump, but Donald Trump certainly didn't help his fortunes. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Jabbar placed the first IED at Bourbon and St. Peter Street at 1:53 a.m. Jabbar placed the second IED in a bucket-type cooler at 2:20 a.m. on Bourbon and Toulouse Streets.
And this is some of the amazing timeline of events that have taken place and revealed by the FBI. New Orleans terror. He learned so much about the killer and becoming a parent. He could have been stopped before attacking the city. If tracked, never would have gotten to Louisiana if we were aware. I'll explain.
Number two.
I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole damn life. And I know them. I know how they think. Not a joke.
So you're proud of that? You've been doing the same thing for 50 years and you know more than some 37-year-old reporter? I don't know. What is your point? Desperate, angry, and exposed. Joe Biden furiously trying to save his legacy. He's got two big speeches planned, a visit to go see the Pope. But what is he doing for us? That's my question. And has he ever been there when he's there?
Number one.
Well, I hope we have full attendance. We got a big snowstorm coming to D.C., and we encourage all of our colleagues, do not leave town, stay here, because, as you know, the Electoral Count Act requires this on January 6th at 1 p.m. So whether we're in a blizzard or not, we are going to be in that chamber.
Yes, obviously, they're going to be there, and most are there. Blizzard be damned. Look for Congress to certify Trump's historic electoral victory. Look for Democrats to go out of their way to say January 6th, January 6th. You know what that date is. And that's what we're going to be talking about this hour. Bottom of the hour, Senator Tommy Tuberville. Today, at 1 o'clock Eastern time, they're going to get certification of Donald Trump's historic election. First guy to come back to the office since losing the office. A second guy ever, and first since Grover Cleveland did it. Now, remember, Teddy Roosevelt tried to do it. It didn't work. Because what he did is he had to split his ticket. Woodrow Wilson ended up being president of the United States because he and Taft, once he mentored Taft, begged him to take the nomination. He said, okay, I'll take it. Never really wanted to be president. I wanted to be Supreme Court justice. He goes ahead and takes it. He doesn't do what Teddy wanted him to do. So Teddy's like, I'm going to run against you. And he didn't get the nomination, so he formed his own party. He ended up coming in second. Woodrow Wilson comes in first. And then he becomes, I think, a terrible president, even though he did set up the League of Nations. But he's a guy, ironically enough, that had a stroke in office, was totally immobile, and had his wife run the country and never told anyone till years later. Now we're looking at something very similar, as we have somebody named Joe Biden, who hasn't really been able to function on a regular basis as president of the United States. That's going to be the story that's written a little bit later on, but I'll talk about that. First off, I want to talk about what's going to happen. The certification of Donald Trump. Here's more from Speaker Johnson, who, thanks to Donald Trump, became speaker again. Cut one.
Well, I hope we have full attendance. We got a big snowstorm coming to D.C., and we encourage all of our colleagues, do not leave town, stay here, because, as you know, the Electoral Count Act requires this on January 6th at 1 p.m. So whether we're in a blizzard or not, we are going to be in that chamber making sure this is done. Listen, President Trump had a mandate, a landslide, you know, so many electoral votes, and we get to count them all, and we cannot delay that certification. He deserves that. 77 million Americans voted for President Trump and this agenda. Almost 75 million for the House. That's our highest number ever. So we call it a mandate. I believe it is. And we got to get to work beginning immediately on Monday.
Right. So what's going to happen? A lot of executive orders, I get it. But one thing they're going to have is a piece of legislation so it sticks. They got to find a way to extend the tax cuts. They got to start drilling oil and gas. They got to get some of these federal lands undesignated so they can go drill and drill on them responsibly. I'm not talking about getting it's an all of the above strategy. Go back to that instead of if you're green, you're good and we'll pay you with our money to do it. And even if the country's not ready for it in terms of getting our allies in natural gas, we got to do it. Get the terminals in, get it going, get the ships flowing, help out Japan, help out Western Europe and help them stay off Russian gas. Give them an alternative to buying oil from Iran and Russia. That's key. And they'll also border money. What are they going to do with all the illegals? How are they going to transport them out of the country? It's going to cost money. So what Senator Thune wants to do is break it up. Let's do this one by one. And what Mike Johnson says, I only got a two-vote advantage. I can't get everybody to sign off on all this individually. I'm going to have to do it all together. So Senator Thune says, you know, I'm going to be up for debate on this. But I would rather do it one by one. He understands what's happening and how hard it's going to be for the House to get it done. Senator Jim Banks was just in the House, is now senator from Indiana, said this yesterday, cut eight.
I'm for doing it in one bill. And yeah. This week is good evidence. Donald Trump weighed in support of Mike Johnson. I don't think Mike Johnson would be Speaker of the House this morning if Donald Trump wouldn't have weighed in last week, spent political capital to help him get elected on one vote. And to me, that's a positive sign that House Republicans are unified behind Donald Trump, the Trump agenda.
Right. And let's see what happens with his nominees. Now we have the nominees have to get in place. Not only would that be a victory for President Trump quickly, and if you don't want him, you don't want him. And then let's hear about it. Let's get a vote. Because just leaving those jobs open, whether it's an ambassadorship or Secretary of State, hurts the country. Democrat or Republican, I really hate this process. I think they, after this is done, they got to reform it. And just get quickly to the hearings and vote. Stop delaying things. So first up is on the 14th, the hearing for Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense. John Thune has told Donald Trump and has now leaked out to NBC that he believes Pete has the votes. Now, what about Tulsi Gabbard? What about RFK? What about Kristi Noem? It's going to be tough. Cash Patel as FBI director really makes me think he's the right pick. Why? Because Adam Schiff hates him. Cut 12.
Well, first of all, Cash Patel should not be confirmed. And I think the terrorist attack in New Orleans and my heart goes out to those who have lost loved ones in that attack just underscores again the importance of having someone directing the FBI that has experience, that has judgment, that has character, that will prioritize defending the country against the violence we saw in New Orleans or the violence we saw on January 6th, not someone whose top priority is political vendettas, who believes in deep state conspiracy thinking, not someone who is as unqualified as Cash Patel.
If you look at his background, he's very qualified, not law enforcement wise, but political experience. Yes, prosecutor, defender. And number two, it's not conspiracy theories, Adam Schiff, because you know what was going on behind the scenes in order to cut the legs and the knees out from President Trump. That's not a conspiracy theory. Great people in the field, terrible people on the seventh floor in Washington, and they're going to be gutted. That's not a conspiracy theory, but that's where you're different. Look, they're going to go out there. They're going to ask him tough questions. Cash Patel, I had a chance to talk to him at the Army-Navy game. He is more than ready. If you read his book, he talks about people flagrantly about who he thinks got to go. Okay, that's the way it is. In terms of people who are going to have a tougher time, but if you have the answers, you won't. Is RFK Jr. Bill Cassidy weighed in on him. Remember, he was a doctor, and he talks about basically Hegseth. First off, here he is on Pete Hegseth, cut 16.
You've already met with Hegseth. Are you a yes for him?
You know, I still have to see that process. One, we had a great interview. He presented the issues that that we all know about in the press, and he had a response for them. He was there with his wife. He explained how, you know, went after the war, after he served in the war, his life was messed up, and now it's better. I get that. But I'd also like to review the data, the information, which is being requested. That is part of fully vetting someone. But Pete did a great job in his interview with me.
So basically, they think he has the votes. That'd be fantastic. Get him in place. Get that deputy chief of staff in place. from Cerberus, and he's now ran this huge hedge fund, big company. So he used Pete's skills as a war fighter, knowing the military machine, and somebody who might know how to run this major organization. You get the deputies, the undersecretaries in place. Get ready to go, guys. That's it. Now, in terms of RFK, with Bill Cassidy a doctor, he's got a different set of scrutiny and background. He's going to want direct answers. And look, some Democrats are mad at RFK for working for Trump, and they shouldn't be. He tried to get the Democratic nomination. They wouldn't let him get into the primary, so they shouldn't be mad at him. He had no choice but to run on his own, and the only person with an outstretched hand was Donald Trump. It wasn't Joe Biden, not even the RFK family. They weren't looking. Most of his family abandoned him. So now this is the question. Cut 17.
How is RFK Jr. faring among Democrats on your committee?
I haven't spoken to him about it. I just don't know. I will meet with him this coming week. I look forward to the interview. I agree with him on some things and disagree on others. The food safety, I think the ultra-processed food is a problem. Vaccinations, he's wrong on. And so I just look forward to having a good dialogue with him on that.
All right, listen, when we come back, I want to talk about the New Orleans investigation. So much happened, you might have missed it. After all, you're coming off vacation. A lot of you weren't even around a TV yesterday. I'm going to go through some of it, but just it's so much more detailed than you thought. And number two, it's so much more complicated than you may have imagined. So we'll discuss that. And I'll squeeze in some calls, 1-866-408-7669. Don't move. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Over the holidays, I've also had a chance to reflect and have had long talks with my family about our future. Throughout the course of my career, any success I have personally achieved has been because of their support and with their encouragement. So last night over dinner, I told my kids about the decision that I'm sharing with you today. I intend to resign as party leader, as prime minister, after the party selects its next leader through a robust, nationwide, competitive process.
Says he couldn't win if he had to fight his own side. You're right. And I can't give you the latest on Canadian politics, but I know one thing. He was not going to win. I do know Canadians. They hate this guy. And he's in love with himself. He's in love with his whole wokeness. Well, what he came in on might have been acceptable, but what he's leaving on isn't. America's changed. Canada's changed. And I'll add something else. He lost anybody. Most blue-collar people, when he did those truckers, actually went into their bank accounts and took money and froze their bank accounts because they came in and were talking about the different tolls they had to pay to get across the border. It was insane what he did. It shows he was caught up in his power. And let's just hope a conservative goes north of the border and understands you got to bulk up defense and bulk up your own borders. I think that would certainly be a plus. But as I promised you before, I want to talk about what happens in New Orleans. So what happened in New Orleans on New Year's Eve at 3:30 in the morning, it turns out that this guy had scoped this place out before. I'm talking about New Orleans. He wore some of those Meta glasses that allow you to record, that look like normal glasses, but record what you see. He was on a bike, recorded it. He was on foot, he recorded it. They also provided footage of him dropping off what looks like a cooler with a long handle that was full of IEDs that were full of nails. So think about the damage this could have done strategically placed in the French Quarter and New Orleans. The goal clearly seems to be, and it looks like he worked alone because they show him going back and forth to his truck and picking up one another, picking up and dropping off another. Then you also know where his Airbnb was. So I guess ideally his goal, according to the ISIS chapter, is you do something low tech, like run over people. Then you get out, have to have a second plan of attack, which is in his case, he knows how to use a gun because of his years in the military. He has a huge gun that he bought. They have video of him getting guns at gun stores and shopping for it. So he got it. And then I think they had detonation devices that he was going to blow up different sections of the French Quarter. Think about this, what it would have been like. You see a truck going wild, people die in the most horrific way possible. And then you see exploding bombs with nails going all over people, which was just you know how crowded it is. If there's a party in the street on Bourbon Street and they got those narrow, there's nowhere to run. That's why so many people, you know, you had 14 die and so many wounded. There's nowhere to go except for this guy was able to go to school on it, scout it, and figure out this is one area in which if I turn around the cop car at the end, I could drive right up the sidewalk. And that's exactly what he did. What I think is important to point out is there are some keys. Now, not many people, just because a guy's broken, divorced, with a military background, doesn't say, well, let's find out if he's a terrorist. That was the feeling in the beginning. But now we know that his family knew that he'd gone militant because they said that he kind of lost touch with them and that he was Muslim, Christian, then back to Muslim again, and an extremist, very critical of people when they drank or whatever they decided to do that extreme Muslims feel as though is not good. And then he talked about doing a video and traveling around, saying I was going to blow up my family, kill my family, but I was afraid people wouldn't get the message that it wasn't about just an angry guy with his family. This is about a guy that wants to kill Americans. So after doing that, but before doing that, he goes out in June 22nd to July 3rd. He visited Cairo, Egypt, at which time they say he went to well-known terror havens. There was a time in which I thought the Egyptian intelligence would pick up if an American, a Muslim background, shows up in Egypt. If you look at his bank account, all he's got is debt. He owes child support. He's living in a dilapidated trailer home where with a lease that he wasn't even making payments on. You got to see it. Where do you get the money to go to Egypt? It's a lot of money. Then you got to put yourself up. My sense is someone mailed him a check or took care of that ticket. Find that out quick. Now, if your radar is up right away, why is this guy going to Egypt? I would track him. I thought the CIA would be all over stuff like this. Maybe I'm dreaming. Maybe it's not possible, but I really feel during the Bush years and early Obama years, we were on top of this. July 10th, he visits Ontario, Canada, returned days later. What was he doing in Canada? That's going to reveal something. October and November, he visited New Orleans twice in both those times. This is what we were able to ascertain from looking at the video that was available. Now, he had those glasses on, those Meta glasses, but it didn't roll. My sense, a mistake. He had the detonation devices in the back of his car. My sense is maybe perhaps that he was thought he'd survive longer and thought he had some time, or he thought he set it off and it just didn't detonate. Maybe he wasn't good as he thought. So thankfully it didn't. He also visited Tampa, Florida. What did he do there? So I'm not saying that he had accomplices, but maybe he had the coaching. They said that in his the bombs contained material not found in America. Excuse me, much bigger deal. Mystery, why ISIS hasn't taken credit for it. Number two is why people dropped the ball on this. And number three, is this a wake-up call to make sure people understand, stop with the white supremacists, stop with the Catholics that are going to Latin Mass, and start following people that could be affiliated with Al-Qaeda, Islamic extremists that want to attack us here at home. That's key. Someone radicalized this guy. Yeah, he was susceptible. I get it. His life was falling apart. I understand it. You know, he was unsatisfied with his marriages. I get it. But this should have been detectable, I believe. Coming up next, Senator Tommy Tuberville. He's on Armed Services. I'll ask him the same thing.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think you asked that question earlier about the evolution of the threat. And so, particularly the New Orleans case was radicalization online. But what we're worried about in that case is his travels to Egypt and what was going on there. ABC actually reported there's evidence he met with ISIS operatives, affiliates. He was involved with a rare bomb-making material that was not available in the United States.
Wow, isn't that interesting? So from a guy that was dissatisfied with three bad marriages and a bad career who served in the military to a guy that was in Egypt for months, was in Canada, don't know what he was doing, went over to Tampa, but he had no money. And then we find out the bombs the New Orleans bomber used, Jabbar, used had material in it not from this country. So this is getting more complicated by the day, and I got to give the FBI credit after the initial horrible press conference where they wouldn't even admit it was terror, with a woman that was way over her head. they are really trying to be more transparent. But this is more involved. And I am somewhat surprised, as I mentioned, that the CIA wasn't picking up on a guy from America of Muslim descent, of Muslim religion, who travels to Egypt and hangs out in the terror corridors of Egypt, that even it should have them concerned. Senator Tommy Tuberville joins us now. He's on Armed Services, Nutrition and Forestry, Veterans Affairs, Health Education. He's a busy guy and now is in the process of certifying President Trump's election win. But, Senator, your reaction to how this investigation is developing?
Well, it's typical. It starts from the bottom, and I don't think they've ever got off the floor. It's just typical of what's going on, Brian, in the FBI and all of our intel services across the country in the last 3 or 4 years. I was just in a few months ago down in Panama, coming from the Darien Gap, and some CIA operatives there were telling me they were very, very concerned that people were coming in from Africa, and they were, a lot of them, they knew there were going to be ISIS people coming across. And this thing's been way out of control, and it's all on Biden and all the Democrats. They've allowed this to happen, and we've got to make sure that we get control of it very, very quickly, or it's going to get worse.
It is, but I also want to find out the investigation. I want to know where he got that material from. Weren't you under the impression, I know you were probably coaching at the time, but in the Bush years, that we had a situation where our intelligence communication with other countries was so strong, we would pick things like this up. I know it's natural to lose vigilance so far from 9/11, but we have to reinvigorate that focus, don't you think?
I truly believe that. And it all goes back to one thing, trust. I don't know how many people, leaders or other countries really trust the United States of America anymore for what we do. We lie all the time. We do things that we're not supposed to be doing in terms of telling people one thing and doing another. It's an everyday occurrence here. And we should be the norm that people look at to say, hey, America's doing this. Why can't we do this? And it's just the opposite right now with this administration.
Yeah, I think that there's a few things going on that I find somewhat interesting. Congressman Jim Himes was weighing in over the weekend, and he said this about what the real threat is. I think he's missing the mark, and he is ranking member on the Intelligence Committee. Cut 37.
If the question is, what should Americans be afraid of? What has killed Americans since 9/11? It hasn't been people sneaking across the border. And that's not to say that the border shouldn't be secure. The border must be secure. But what has been killing Americans, whether it was Fort Hood in 2009, I think, whether it was the New York attacks that killed 8 people in 2017, what we just sadly saw in New Orleans, it's actually Americans who are in this country. Actually, in a bizarre number of cases, service people.
So does he not understand the name Lincoln Riley? Rachel Marin, does he not know that a woman was burned alive by an illegal alien on our subway in New York City about 3 blocks from where I'm broadcasting?
Brian, they don't want to remember that. They have very selective memory, the Democrats do. And only thing that they try to do is bring up the positives that they think that can help them get their agenda across. Radicalization is going rampant in this country right now, and it starts with our young people. It starts in our universities. It obviously has gotten into our military. We've got to take back all of these agencies, all of these entities, and start teaching things in this country like God, Constitution, things that actually matter. And again, when you do that, A lot of these things will be brought out in public before anything bad happens. So we're our own worst enemy here. And again, it all starts with teaching things on the internet that kids have the opportunity to look at, but they don't have the opportunity to go to somebody, whether it's an education system or a high school, college, or whatever, to have this debunked of what they're reading on the internet. It's gotten way out of hand.
So today is going to be a big day, certifying the election of Donald Trump with his overwhelming electoral victory. Can you bring us through the procedure?
Yeah, well, the first thing, that was my first day in office, January the 6th, 2021, my first day on the Senate floor. So it's been pretty bumpy for the last 4 years. The only thing I can tell you that right now that is the same is when you come I live about 200 or 300 yards from the Capitol. As I walked over this morning, there's Capitol Hill police and fences every 20-30 feet. Nothing's going to happen. Of course, the weather here is god awful. It's snowing, got probably 6 or 7 inches of snow. But the procedure today is we will meet about 12:40 Eastern time in the Senate as senators. All 100 of us will walk down to the other end of the Capitol where the House meets. We'll go in and they'll start the procedure of confirming the votes. And it will be done then. I'm hearing that the Democrats are not going to contest any state. If you go back to January the 6th, 2020, we contested Arizona. So after Arizona, we had to go all the way back down to the Senate floor and start the procedure there of contesting the electoral votes coming from Arizona. Unfortunately, that's when all the ruckus started, and we didn't finish until about midnight, 11 hours from that point. So I think this will end up very quickly, probably in an hour down at Senate and the House, and we can get this thing done and get President Trump on the way to be inaugurated here in about 2 weeks.
Out of all the nominees, who do you think is going to have the most difficult time, and is there anybody you're wrestling with, Senator Tuberville?
No, I'm not wrestling. I've met almost all of them. Pam Bondi, I know very well. She has not been by my office, but I've met with her several times. She's been actually come spoke at a couple of my hearings that I've had on some things about men and women's sports. But I don't think we'll have any problems. I think we're actually going to have a few Democrats that are going to vote for a few of our nominees. Now, if you go back to 2021, all the Democrats voted for every of Joe Biden's nominees. And, you know, I've been talking to some of my colleagues here on the Republican side. You got to give President Trump his team to go to work with as soon as possible, because he's not going to have but a very short period of time to get things done and going in the right direction. So hopefully we get them all done. But, you know, I can't speak for 4 or 5 senators here that for some reason just really don't want to participate in anything that Donald Trump has to do with.
So there's a big debate now whether you guys should put your whole agenda into one bill in the House and then sign off on the Senate, or do what Senator Thune wants and do one bill at a time, whether it's border security or tax reform or building up the military or oil and gas. So Trump is leaning towards doing it all as one. What do you think, Senator?
100%. We should do it all in one. It's going to take a few more days here of probably working on weekends, which we need to stay up here.
Well, that means April, right? April or May?
Yeah. I think we can get it done. Obviously, it's got to start in the House. We'll participate in that behind the scenes as senators to make sure that what goes in there, we communicate. That's what happened, Brian. If you go back to that border bill that the Democrats and Republicans worked on, and then they brought it to us and said, you know, this is a great bill. The Democrats course pointed at us going, well, you voted it down. And it was a terrible bill. It was allowing 5,000 immigrants to come in a day. Well, this bill is going to be so complicated, but we need to communicate. It needs to go back and forth. We need to talk about it. Have people in the room from the Senate and the House talking about this to make sure that if they put one thing in there that somebody's against, we don't need to do it. So there's got to be compromise. We got to work hard at it, but we have to get this done. The taxes have to be done, but obviously the border. Mm-hmm. President Trump's going to do a lot with the border first day anyway with executive orders, but we have got to get the tax bill done for the American people, because if we wait at the end of the next year, taxes are going to go way up, and it'll be devastating, and especially to the House and maybe even to the Senate on the next election.
Is there anything that you think that Democrats have come up to you and said, hey, when this comes up, we come to us because we might be into it?
No, not really. I think if you go back, Schumer actually brought the tax bill up about, 7-8 months ago, brought it to the floor. But the problem is they put $60-70 billion a year more of child tax credits in it. We can't afford it. That'd have been around $6 or $7 trillion in a short period of time. And we told them, why in the world would we do this when we can wait next year when we get a Republican? But they gambled and they lost. And so we're going to get the right tax bill done and get the right bill for the border, and we'll be off and running.
A quick question when you sports background. It's you and Joe Manchin were trying to work on something in the Senate to reform college sports. They're asking for regulation. Then I see this story. Darian Mensah of Tulane, who would probably beat Duke, is now going to be transferring to Duke for $8 million, $4 million a year. It's going to be the richest quarterback in college football history and playing. How do you feel about that? I mean, not only a scholarship not good enough, but now $4 million to go to a team like Duke, a more prestigious university perhaps, but not a better program.
No, and again, Brian, if you go back and look at this, education should be number one. The problem, I've got no problem with kids making money, okay? I don't care what kind of money they make. They should be able to make money because this is what this country is about. If you get out and work hard, 99% of these kids in basketball or football are not going to play in the NFL anyway, so they're trying to get money early. Well, that's fine. The problem is we're allowing these kids to take this money and not sign a contract. We've got to do 2 or 3 year contracts where if they do leave, they got to pay money back. There's got to be some consequences. Right now, there's no consequences to a kid leaving, say, going to Auburn to Georgia, and the next year he might go somewhere else just for $25,000 more, and he's not ever going to get a degree. There's got to be a reciprocal here from the player to the money being paid to the university.
It would be great. I mean, by the way, there's only a few revenue-earning sports. You know, you got basketball and football and in some places maybe baseball, but for the most part, nobody else is earning revenue. So you guys are – football and basketball are supplying all the revenue for it. Do you see a – time? I mean, look, there's a salary cap in the NFL. There's a salary cap in the NHL. There's a luxury tax in baseball. Why can't there be some type of rules in college basketball and still be a free market, college sports and still be a free market?
Well, what happened, Brian, is a few years ago when the Supreme Court come out and said, listen, NIL for college athletes, we're in on it. It's good. They can make money. The problem is when they kicked that down, NCAA didn't want to have anything to do with regulations. Because every time they do some kind of regulation, they're going to get sued. But that's what happens with entities that control something. They didn't want to get into the fight, and they should have. They should have come out immediately and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get together and put all these things together of contracts and transfers and anything that's involved. But again, it goes back to one thing, Brian. Education's got to be put back into this. This cannot become minor league sports. If it does, let's just call it that and go on with it and not have them go to class, not have them get an education, not have them get a degree and just play college sports as a club sport and forget about it. But it's a lot the NCAA's fault. We're going to continue to – Joe Manchin's gone. I'm going to continue to work on it here. But I'm going to tell you, it is very, very hard to get anybody to agree with anything when it comes to – college sports right now. Some schools actually like this because it gives them a chance, they think, but eventually after 4 or 5 years from now, after they're paying all this money to players, these donors are going to get donor fatigue and it's the bottom's going to fall out of it.
I hope so because I want to go back to some structure. Thanks so much. Kind of tapping into your entire SWAT, your entire resume. Senator Tommy Tuberville, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, good luck today. 1-866-408-7669. Brian, kill me back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. I got some good news. This just in, and exclusive to us. We have a brand new station, our family of networks. It's WLOB in Portland, Maine. We're thrilled to be joining this great station. Monday through Friday, you listen to us from 10 to noon live. And we're launching today on January 6th. Famous because Democrats want you to worry about 4 years ago. Republicans want you to think about today. WLOB, News Talk in Maine. So now you don't have to go anywhere or go online. You can listen on your local station where I know you guys must be laughing at the fact that Kentucky is getting 1 to 3 inches of snow, 27 states affected. That's an average day for you guys, or that's a spring day for you guys, a robust, hearty group. So thanks so much for WLOB for carrying our show, and I know you're not going to be disappointed. Quick note, too, February 15th, if you're in Maine, start driving now. I want to see you in Jacksonville, Florida Theater, on the 15th at 8 o'clock, VIP a little bit earlier. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. I get a chance to talk about inspiration, motivation, and patriotism. I go through and base it on my 7 history books and move us through American history and up to today. It is like no other show in the history of man. So hopefully you'll do it. And it's also sponsored with Fox Nation. So you're going to get specials just by going, and we might even be streaming it. All right. We can go to the phones right now. Steve, you're on Long Island. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Brian. My thought is that if John Thune and the Senate want something to do, that Mike Johnson should represent H.R. 2, having to do with the border, tweak it if you need to. But I would say shoot that over to give him something to do.
What happens is he wants something to get people that don't want it. There's some moderate Republicans, believe it or not, that don't want H.R. 2. And there's some other Republicans that don't want the tax reform. So some other people say, you know, I don't want drilling in my backyard. Not to a great degree, but if they lose 4 or 5, they're done. So he said, if I put them all together in a basket, each one of these men and women will be able to tell their constituents, yeah, I didn't get everything I wanted, but look what I did get. And that's his main thought pattern. How do you feel about that?
I understand what they're saying. It's just that if this was already done, shoot it over and get working on everything else. But if you got to do the biggie, go ahead and do it.
Right. If you have to do it one at a time, I hear you. Let's go to Mike in Texas. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Brian. How you doing today?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, this award of this Medal of Freedom that was awarded to people like George Soros. What the heck is he doing getting an award for an American in the first place? And second of all, why is he getting it? He's the one that's been putting these attorney generals, or these district attorneys in that will let the thugs go and just basically ruining this country.
You're exactly pointed to the difference between the parties. Instead of George Soros, you know, people are donors. You know, some people don't like Elon Musk. Some people don't like other big financiers. But the difference with Soros is he put his money to allow society to go wild, get rid of law and order. And some Democrats are happy with that. It's hard to get your head around, but they want the chaos. They think it's not the criminal's fault. We feel differently.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Biden Files.
A person's final story can be told through their bodies in an autopsy.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Biden covers 3 incredible cases where he helped change the course of the investigation.
Sometimes it takes more than one look to put the pieces together.
Listen and follow starting January 7th at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.